I would like to welcome Ellen Schaefer, the director of the Silver Ribbon Campaign to Trust Women, to Cowles Radio. Hello, Ellen.
Hi there.
Oh, welcome. Well, the Silver Ribbon Campaign to Trust Women, an interesting title for an organization.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from?
Well, my partner in setting this up is an adolescent medicine doctor, Dr. Sophia Yen.
Yeah.
And she likes silver. It connotes science over ideology, surgical steel to her. Mm. And the aim of our campaign is to increase the voice and visibility of the pro-choice majority. We distribute silver ribbon-shaped pins that say Trust Women on them. And the idea is for the pro-choice majority to have a symbol that can make our opinions known.
And, and be visible.
Mm-hmm.
When did the organization start?
We started in 2011. Dr. Yen and I had both been watching the development of the Affordable Care Act, and Sophia's been, we've both been active in reproductive rights for quite a long time, but when we were watching the compromises on coverage, both for contraception and for abortion, in this really groundbreaking healthcare reform legislation, but seeing the resistance even among the Democratic Congress, we really thought that it was time to wake up ourselves, each other, and our colleagues in the reproductive rights and women's health movement, and think about ways that we could be more effective.
Well, indeed, and really you're pointing out to really the continuing discrimination against women and their health matters.
Absolutely.
This is what we're talking about.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's been this year 40 years since abortion became recognized as a legal health care procedure in the United States. That was the Supreme Court decision in 1973, contraception has been available over the counter since the mid-1960s, and we're still seeing, despite progress on all sorts of other issues, we're still seeing that this issue is apparently can be made to be controversial, and it has real consequences for women and for the health of the country. We have an unintended pregnancy rate of 50%. That's higher than any other industrialized country. And it's important that we change the conversation and change the facts on the ground.
Well, this is it. I mean, where are the... I mean, it seems amazing, you know, in 2013 that we can't get the facts out and that people, you know, can see those things. Is it being obfuscated? Is that really the efforts by the people against contraception and abortion?
You know, it's difficult to say. I think there are a lot of factors at play. I think that despite the rousing victories that we had in this past election, we had, as you probably recall, people running for Congress and for Senate claiming that basically people who were legitimately raped couldn't get pregnant because your body would shut that whole thing down, all kinds of other outrageous claims. And those people did not get elected. They demagogued on that issue. But nevertheless, we have 30 state legislatures and 30 governors around the country that are anti-choice, anti-abortion, anti-contraception.
Did you say 30, not 13?
30.
Okay.
Right, right. We have places like North Dakota passing laws saying that basically an abortion will not be permitted after 6 weeks, which is incredible. I mean, at 6 weeks, most people don't know that they're pregnant.
No. Wow.
So it's really the tyranny of a... I don't know if I... It's tempting to put pejoratives in front of how we describe them, but certainly a minority that is nevertheless has real power over the lives of women. And I think part of it has to do with our just being better organized and really seizing back the power in these states and in our Congress and making our voices heard.
Well, this is it. Now, when obviously we can talk about the Affordable Care Act, and many compromises were made. Were these done in back rooms? How was that to and fro to come up with it, what was allowed and not? How did that come about?
Well, I think the negotiations were public to some extent, but, you know, there are a lot of arcane rules about getting this legislation through both the House and the Senate, and some conservative Democrats aligned, this is in 2010, aligned with Republicans and demanded that coverage for abortion be treated separately, that in these new health insurance exchanges, in the new insurance plans that are being made available, which is a great benefit, of course, to people who couldn't get insurance before, but that to the extent that the federal government was going to have a hand in expanding insurance coverage for people, that these legislators wanted to make sure that abortion would be, if made available, that it would be made available as a separate benefit, which, of course, is discriminatory and a way to put a roadblock in front of people's access to the benefit. That was followed by a pretty public debate about covering contraception. This is after the law was passed and signed into law. In 2011 and 2012, there were debates about what would constitute a preventive health care benefit, because the law said that they would cover it, that preventive health care benefits would be covered without additional copays and deductibles. And very simple reasoning to that: we want to make sure that people are able to afford and buy prevention so that they won't need more expensive treatments down the road. Now, I think most of us wouldn't argue about the fact that contraception is a preventive health care benefit. What else does it do? Nevertheless, there was a package of women's health care benefits that was passed explicitly in language proposed by Senator Barbara Mikulski, gestational diabetes testing, also several other kinds of coverage that women should have, and it included contraception. This was challenged by then the new majority in the House, which after 2011 was Republican, and they basically did almost very little. They did some other damaging things, but they had scores and scores of hearings in 2011, 2012 about the questioning whether contraception was in fact a preventive benefit, and really excoriating the administration for trying to promote this coverage. It finally was put into place in August of 2012, but then there was a controversy promulgated by some religious employers about whether they would have to cover this benefit as well. Right. So it's really been a remarkable set of debates, I think, for women of all ages, for men of all ages, who really, most of us who've been watching this debate take place, it's just difficult to believe that this is the United States, as you say, in 2013.
Exactly, and I understand Viagra had no problem being approved.
This is right. This is true. And that was the argument that when now Congresswoman Jackie Speier, when she was in the state legislature, that was the argument that she made to actually get contraceptives covered covered equally in the state of California.
It's incredible.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned a bit earlier about the amount of unplanned pregnancies is the highest, I note, but also I noticed that it's really, really skewed to the poor. That there's a huge differential between people of, you know, middle class, say, and people below the poverty line. Can you explain that?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Women of color and lower income women have a much harder time affording contraception, getting access to contraception, and then if they become pregnant, much harder for them to, again, afford and get access to abortion care if that's what they choose, if that's the decision that they make. Many people have had trouble affording contraception, and, of course, lower-income women tend to work in jobs where they don't have as great health care coverage. And if you have to travel, to get to a provider. If you're in one of many California counties where certainly there's not an abortion provider, but there may not be an affordable OBGYN that you can get to if you have to take time off from work to go to get your prescription. You know, there are just many more barriers in the way of low-income women.
Does the so really, with all that back and forth with the Affordable Care Act, where does that leave these women?
Well, theoretically, starting next year in 2014, there will be greatly expanded coverage for people over 200% of the federal poverty level. They'll be entitled to buy health insurance through health insurance exchanges, and there will be coverage for contraception, at least. There's still a debate about how we're going to arrange for abortion care. We're much better off in that respect in California because our laws are pretty good. The exception is if you're working for either a church or for a religiously affiliated hospital, university, charity, whatever, there's still controversy about how you're going to be covered for your contraceptive care. So you may actually have to buy a separate, not buy, there's an agreement that you wouldn't have to pay extra for it, but you may have to obtain a separate rider, for contraception. So it's still looking dicey on that front.
It's there's nothing's ever decided. It's incredible.
Well, not completely, but I think that we can certainly be more vocal and encourage the administration to stick to policies that will benefit us. And really, it is up to the Department of Health and Human Services now to issue regulations around things like coverage for contraception for people who work for religiously affiliated employers, then we can encourage the administration to put an end to this. I mean, it really is it's not controversial with the population. 99% of heterosexually active couples in the U.S. have used contraception at some point. It's not even the case that most of the people who work for these religious employers share that religion or share the religion's views on these issues.
Right.
So there are certainly grounds for a decision to be made. And I think our view is, again, we need to speak up and make sure that the people that we just elected, especially the people that we elected who said they agreed with us, pay some attention.
Well, it seems to be that disconnect, isn't there? Even like Catholic women, over 90% of Catholic women use birth control.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the reality is not accepted by the main church.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true.
That's very tricky when it gets to that point, isn't it? Who blinks first, really?
Well, you know, it can be, but these cases, particularly around contraceptive coverage, have gone through the courts in the past. I mean, this is not the first time that these issues have come up, and these religious employers typically have not prevailed. In fact, in no cases have these religious employers prevailed. So there are good, you know, I mean, I think any administration wants to be fair, and we need to have a dialogue about these issues. But at a certain point also, I think we need to make decisions that are going to benefit the majority.
Exactly. And that's the whole point of government, isn't it? Is to get them, help as many people as possible.
Right. Right.
Back in early part of the year, there was January, there was a Trust Women's Week. You had. How did that go and that affect? Has that helped you through this early part of the year?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was really an occasion for women's organizations around the country. It was the second time that we had done it. We did it in January of 2012 also, and of course this year was the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and what we did was put together something we're still working on and perfecting. It's called the Open Petition System, and it allows numerous organizations to collaborate on one set of online statements. And again, it was a way for organizations around the country to reach out to their members. You know, you can't always have a march on Washington, and there are a lot of people in parts of the country where it's the folks are not comfortable stepping forward in their communities. But through this system, they were able to go online and express their opinion and talk about the statements that they agreed with on our site. So we're continuing to develop those relationships with our partner organizations, and I think moving towards a place where we can make this more widely available. It's a system that lets groups collaborate so well that all of their logos show up visibly, but each organization gets back the names that they contributed. And one reason that we think that that's important, I know it sounds a little bureaucratic, but again, as we've been discussing, it's really important that we build up and strengthen the organizations that care about this issue and that do have their roots into areas where women need the opportunity to speak up.
Indeed. Can you let us know some of the people who you're working with?
Some of the organizations, yeah. Well, we work with ACT for Women and Girls, a group in Visalia, California. We work with People for the American Way, certainly with Planned Parenthood around the country, including the state affiliate and several of the local Planned Parenthoods, the National Women's Law Center, a whole variety of organizations around the country participated. The Ms. Foundation, Feminist Majority National Organization for Women was very active, the American Association of University Women, just a whole host of organizations. People can look at our website at oursilverribbon.org and see the groups who partner with us on a regular basis, also the groups who participated in Trust Women Week. And then, of course, we had a celebration here in San Francisco. Dr. Yen and I are based here in the Bay Area, and we had a celebration at Justin Herman Plaza on the Embarcadero, and people can again see the many organizations who partnered on that event and see pictures online. That event was also sponsored by most of our local elected officials and the Department of Public Health, which was very gratifying.
How do you interact with local politicians? How does that work? Do you sit down with them, or does it have to be more of an arm's length?
No, they were beating down our door. There were some people who showed up at our celebration whom we had inadvertently not been in touch with prior to the event, and they were quite adamant that they wanted to be with us and they wanted to speak. We had our state senator, state assembly people, many people from the Board of Supervisors, members of Congress, I would say, here in the Bay Area. Folks are quite strong and quite public about their perspectives.
Do you reach out to those who are opposed? How do you work with that side? How do you try? Can you try and convince that side?
Well, you know, again, we're a nonprofit organization, so we educate folks. I mean, when I'm talking about legislators showing up at our public event, this was, you know, a celebration where people were making statements and speeches. We had a whole range of folks. But we have not gone directly to members of Congress, say, who don't agree with our position. We do encourage women in those districts, in districts around the country, to sign our petitions, to take those petitions to their members of Congress if they're having those kinds of meetings, and to take strength from the fact that they're going, that they're doing their publicity, that they're doing their meetings backed by people around the country.
We're speaking with Ellen Schaefer, the director of the Silver Ribbon Campaign to Trust Women. And we're talking about women's health, basically, and reproductive rights, public health, all those things that everyone should take for granted. But yet, it is not quite. And it's fun. There's funny, there's some odd things. I just noticed some vestiges of the past. Can you tell us something about the Hyde Amendment? It seems strange that it's still rearing its head.
Yeah, good question. 1976, three years after the Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion, in 1976, the House of Representatives voted as part of an appropriations bill, and we're all getting much more familiar these days with budget processes we probably not know so much about. But at that time, appropriations bills were voted on every year or every 2 years with every new session of Congress, and there was a rider that was placed onto one of the appropriations bills preventing the federal government from using any funds for abortion, preventing any health care programs sponsored or funded by the federal government from paying for abortion. So at that point, pretty much it meant women on Medicaid. Women on Medicare, of course, there were some disabled women on Medicare, but mostly it's people over 65 and not so relevant. But for people on Medicaid, which is the state federal program for low-income women, that this rule had an effect on them. It was then bounced back to various states to see if they could figure out a way around that so that low-income women would not be disadvantaged. And in California, we have found a variety of ways to do that. However, what ended up happening is that this Hyde Amendment, this ban on using federal dollars to pay for abortions, has really metastasized. Basically, it has come to cover federal employees in all walks of life. It's come to cover women in the military. It's been a real horror show. We've been hearing a lot recently about sexual harassment, the routine rapes against many people, women in the military, and the situation has been that for those women who are stationed overseas, when they become pregnant through whatever relationship is causing it, if they want to have or need to have an abortion, they need to go off base, use their own money, basically leave the system and find some place to have it done, which is pretty impossible in a lot of the foreign places where women serve. So it is an extremely discriminatory and horrible rule in the way it's just on its face and in the way it's being implemented. The problem now, there are two problems now in terms of dealing with it. First of all, given the budget mess that we see, Congress really doesn't vote on appropriations bills anymore. At least they don't get passed into law. And the other problem is that we have a majority in the House of Representatives now who are just anti-choice.
Right.
Under any circumstances. We're close. We now have a pro-choice majority in the Senate, but it's thin. So it's encouraging that we're starting to see now that women, we saw the a lot of the anti-choice Democrats have lost their seats in the last few years, and we're starting to see women campaigning even earlier. The next election for the House of Representatives won't be until November 2014, but there are women who are starting to run now for open seats, and I think it's really a great way to promote the conversation and to make it clear to people what's really at stake in these elections, and to be calling on candidates and our members of Congress to be taking positions and to stick by them.
Well, that's it. We hope after the debacle at the last election, in terms of what the Republicans did, you know, in terms of their pathetic effect on for women, it seems like, you know, it's a good time to keep the ball rolling through that. I think our people are still upset and up at arms about it.
Oh, absolutely. You mean around these issues?
Yeah.
There was just another decision. It's a little complicated. I'm not sure how much time we have left, but there was just a recent decision in Washington about how the morning after pill can be sold, whether it can be sold over the counter, and the age of the women who it should be available to. Essentially, this is a fight that has been going on since 2005, and scientists have repeatedly said through the Food and Drug Administration medication should be made available over the counter without any restrictions. You could buy a bottle of aspirin and it would kill you. You can buy 20 of these pills that won't do anything to you except if you take it right away when you want to. It'll stop you from getting pregnant.
Right.
The administration didn't go that way on this decision, but I was, and they're going to appeal a decision that they should have agreed with, but I was in touch with the coalition in Washington, D.C. and around the country, who were basically had built up such solidarity and such a great working relationship around this campaign that they were basically getting together and reading the statements affirming our position and the judge's views that the administration decision swiping down this access that we ought to have had, the language was pretty explicit about what a betrayal it was. So I would say, you know, people know that we're in for a long, hard fight. We realize that there are a lot of sensitive opinions here, that there certainly are opinions on either side, you know, some of which are heartfelt and that people have, and that, you know, it's something we're going to have to work through. But I would say that the coalition of people who understand that we are living in the modern era, that we as women really depend on access to birth control and control over our reproductive lives as a way to, as part of what we need to be functional in the modern world, to have our route to fulfilling relationships, to being able to go to school, being able to have the jobs that we want. And I think that we are, that the feeling of solidarity is pretty strong. And I would say that we're just in the stages of launching a group called Men Who Trust Women, and I know that some of our sister organizations are looking at this too. I think that there are a lot of men who feel like, you know, they enjoy having equal partnerships, and they know that their families, you know, the control of the destiny of their families is bound up in this, and I think that men too are looking for ways to be supportive and to speak out.
Now, I was looking at your background, just sort of going backwards a bit. I mean, obviously, you have incredible qualifications and experience. One thing that jumped out was as a senior health policy advisor to Senator Paul Wellstone. And I know whenever people... What an unfulfilled promise there with him. People still sort of... you know, give a sigh when his name comes up. That would have been an interesting person to have had around.
For sure. No, he would have been pushing. He would be there right there with Al Franken, who's now, of course, the senator from Minnesota, and people like Elizabeth Warren and Alan Grayson from Florida. You know, we're always seeing... shades of Paul. I think not only elected officials, but many of us who worked on his campaigns, who worked in his office. He was an entirely unique individual and an inspiring progressive voice, and we just have to be grateful for the terrific work that he did and the enormous legacy that he really has left behind.
How do you see the next, say, year unfolding, if it goes right for you and for the cause? What do you see happening?
That's a great question. Well, I think that we will see increasingly people using both online communications and in-person opportunities to express our views, to come together, to work across geographic lines and lines of income and ethnicity and race, and demand that we get the services that we need. I think as the Affordable Care Act unrolls and demands for immigration rights proceed, of course, one of the important things about the Affordable Care Act is finding a way to adjust the coverage provisions so that documented immigrants and undocumented workers that we find ways to cover those people. I think as the implementation of the Affordable Care Act continues to roll forward, we're going to continue to see opportunities for women to get together and make sure that we get the coverage that we need to make sure that we advocate. I hope that by the next anniversary of Roe versus Wade in January, we will be seeing stronger coalitions and ties among women's rights groups, and not just women's rights, but as we were saying, all groups that care about health and health care and the public interest. And I would say that going into 2014, there's going to be quite a lot of public education and mobilizing.
Great.
And I would say that I hope that we see silver ribbon pins flourishing around the country. I hope that people will go on our website, yes, and get the pins and wear them and put up pictures online like us on Facebook. Put up the, you can get a twibbon and put a Trust Women sign on your photo. Open to men as well as to women. And I hope that we see a lot of visible symbols and hear a lot of women and men, again, different ages, different income levels, talking about what it is that we need for reproductive justice, for all the conditions that we need to live fulfilling lives, which includes access to reproductive health care services, but many other services and conditions as well.
Exactly, those are unique for women, obviously. It's not the same,
mm-hmm,
as for men. And, well, thank you, Ellen Schaefer. Excellent. Hopefully everyone's learnt quite a bit and they've been energised to keep working, keep volunteering and keep helping to move this this on.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Ellen.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.